sitting here with Ralph Shale, head of design for FCA. You know, I appreciate the fact that when we come over, Ralph, you guys schedule product announcements around our interviews together.
Very convenient, yes.
The four-wheel drive Challenger GT. Can you? I mean, that was really cool today. I'm excited about this.
That was Tim's idea. He's been he's very good at data. Tim is a field guy who's now the brand leader for Dodge, and he knows the business really well, and he's been watching the map. And America, people don't realize, is 50 different little countries, right?
Right.
And the Challenger does really well in the Midwest, in the Southeast, in Texas, but in the Northeast we struggled, and it's mostly to do with the people's perception of rear drive and traction. So what solution? We've had all-wheel drive in that platform, and now we've applied it to the Challenger. So,
well, it's always something that it's changed, though, hasn't it? Like you said, there is a perception of rear-wheel drive vehicles, but the way a new car drives versus one even 5 years ago. Yeah.
That's why I use the word perception, because you know it's amazing what you can do with some good tire technology. But anyway.
How much of what you do is perception?
Wow, that's a good question. I would say a good half of it, because we deal in what we call perceived quality, appeal, image building, emotion. Whether it's retro design or futurism, we're always trying to make a statement of some kind, you know. And whether it's the minivan, which is as functional as a car can possibly be, but still is beautiful, in my opinion, to something as voracious as a Challenger, or you know, so we really flex the personality of a car using the pen, you know.
I just spent a week with the Pacifica,
and
it's funny the timing. This is all timed out. Just finally, you know, my chance to do a review on it. So I've never actually done a review in front of somebody who was responsible for the vehicle. It's kind of like going to school and talking to the teacher about the parents and not the kid, because I'm the kid and all this when I'm driving them, but. Just to give you a little feedback, we have a Grand Caravan, and it's like 6-7 years old. And then the rule in our family, my wife and I have been married for 24 years, and it's always been buy one car, pay it off, get the next one, and ping pong back and forth. Well, it was my turn, but then I brought home the Pacifica. So you're kind of hurting me here, Ralph, because now we're looking at the Pacifica.
Good for you. You can't go wrong.
the simplest comment I can give you, and the best thing I can say for my wife was, this is a step forward.
Yeah.
Isn't that what you want?
Yeah.
I mean, someone to look at it who's in the line, who's we love our Grand Caravan. I mean, we've put a lot of miles. We do a lot of road trips, two boys, camping, you name it. I mean, we use
the format works. I mean, it's clear the format works. And that's what we did with the Pacifica. And again, it's a team effort. If there ever was a labor of love, it's a Pacifica. I mean, everyone in the company understands that vehicle. They love it. But we approached it with a very humble way. We talked to our customers and said, what are your latent needs? We know you like your vans, but what's missing? You know what I mean? And then we also looked at what we call rejectors, people that just, you know, minivans are toxic for them. And when you talk to those people, they say, well, it's just not, you know, the wheels are this, or it doesn't feel like it doesn't have any stance, doesn't give me an image feel. So we tried to kind of tackle that while amplifying all of the good things that are already there. So
it looks better moving, and it looks great. The style points on the outside. I like the speed lines on it. I like the fact that it looks,
it's windswept.
And it looks better on the road.
Yeah, and we had a mom design it. I mean, really, Irina Zavatsky, the young designer responsible for the exterior design, is a mom herself, and she had a Town and Country before, and she's had minivans for the last few years. And she designed. I said, I want you to design a van you'd be proud to drive anywhere. You know, so
it's funny how the evolution of a van has changed. That one of the first things my wife looked for, USB outlets. Seriously, you know, we look at some vehicles now, and you think about how we got a 13-year-old, and he's tethered to his devices wherever we go. So that's something we wind up looking for. Like, again, 5 years ago, come on.
Yeah, I think there's at least five, if not six.
They're everywhere. You guys did a really nice job. Yeah. Even in the third row, you took care of the people in the third row with that. Yeah. But it is a lot of fun. It was, it's interesting to drive, and it's one of those cars I followed. Because I live here in Waterford, Michigan, where we're taping this. We're in Auburn Hills right now, but I live over in Waterford. And when you guys first had them out on Interstate 75, I found myself driving past my exit, and I'm following it going, is that a Pacifica?
Yeah, you can tell from the stance. It has a very, very, I would say, athletic stance compared to what we've done before.
Do you still follow cars? Do you see something you're interested in?
Seriously? I creep people out. I really do. And especially, you know, just like anyone else, especially you live in Southeast Michigan, you see these wrapped cars that are all in the black. And I could tell if it's a Ford or, you know, I usually tell the brand. But we also have Hyundai down the river, you know, down river here. So there's a lot of brands do testing here and development. So it's fun to watch it happen. I still get excited by it. And honestly, it's new for me. Yeah, I've been working on the Town and Country for that program in the Pacifica for a few years. But when you see it on the road in context, it's still stimulating. I want to see who's driving it, so I kind of drive next to him and look into the car and wave at him, and they're like, "Who's this creep?"
I'm being stalked by some. Are you surprised by the? Is there an expansion in the demographic with this?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially Conquest. So far, it looks like we're conquesting the Honda and Toyota owners more than ever before. The demographics so far, it's still too early to tell, but it looks like it's skewing younger, which is a good sign as well. Yeah.
Is anyone here calling you the alpha dog now? Huh? Or the alpha Romeo? No one's doing that? They're not calling you the alpha dog?
No.
Okay, I've got something cool. I had one thing that was new today. Good. Your work with Alfa Romeo.
Yeah.
And you said something in an interview, and I don't want to be the guy who calls back to 18 different interviews, but I thought it was interesting to me that, I don't know if it was Auto Week or one of them was talking about how familiar people are with the brand.
Yeah, Larry Webster.
Thank you. I'm reading it, and I tend to go with you. Mm-hmm. We know the name.
Yeah.
If you asked me to draw a picture of an Alfa Romeo, I don't know that I could. I mean, I could.
Yeah.
In general terms.
Yeah, it depends who you speak to, right? Everyone knows the grill. You know, if you're an enthusiast, you know the four-leaf clover, what it means. But when you think of the really romantic Alphas, and I go to all the big Concours across America, and the ones that stop people in their tracks are the Tipo 33s, the old Julias, the GTVs, usually the pre-60s and maybe as late as 75. But they struggled a little bit in the 80s. You know, the Alfa Romeo 75 was a little funky car, the square one with the weird kick in the tail. And the 164 was a front drive. They did a lot of front drive Alphas. A lot of purists will say they have to be rear drive. Sure. And with front drive comes a totally different proportion, as you know. So I think what's happened to Alpha in the last few models with the new Giulia and the 4C is a return to a true athletic, sporty car that's sexy, you know.
The word sexy and passion comes up a lot when we talk about what you guys have done here at FCA with a lot of the products. And the Hellcat is definitely one of those.
Yeah.
It's funny to me that when you see a Hellcat, and I've got friends here who are gearheads and work in the industry, they still laugh when they see one. And I mean in a good way. You know, like when you go somewhere and somebody gets a crazy drink and you go, my God. See a Hellcat and you still pull up the light and go, good Lord.
Yeah, and I love that we have that duality in this company. Here we have a plug-in hybrid minivan launching in literally weeks, and then we have this voracious Hellcat. So I'm very lucky. I pinch myself every morning because I work for a company that has such yummy brands and differentiated brands. You know, and our vehicles couldn't be more different than one another. We have the Wrangler. We've got the new Compass. We've got Challengers. We've got, you know, very diverse portfolio to play with. So for a designer, it never gets boring. Yeah.
But when you use keywords like passion and sexy was a word that you used talking about Alpha, does that play in your head when you guys are working on the design of the vehicle as well? So what do you, like, write it on a wall or something? You know,
no,
sexy
No. I mean, and again, I have to be careful. I don't want to overstate what I do right now because I pave the way for the designers. Well, my job as global head of design is I look over their needs, you know, whether it's the IT, hiring staff, getting, you know, even moving designers around the world, whether we need the talent. But I let the Italians do what they do best. You know, they love to style. They're very talented. They know passion. You say the word Alpha and you're going to sit down and listen to a passionate diatribe for a good 3-4 minutes coming from an Italian enthusiast. So there's no shortage of the energy. It's just a matter of giving them a space to work. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, but one of the things that you've been successful, and again, just based on conversations and stuff, is the idea of being disruptive in any business model, but especially in the automotive industry, where I think some people would say there was a period, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there was a period that we got as an industry maybe PC to the point where you know what I mean. When you go back, not that the vehicles were bad, but they were all very PC. They had a purpose. They had a segment. They did that. This was the function of it. The minivan was for the mom. This is the 4-door. You know, dad got this car, and not anymore.
Yeah, and I'm a lot of people may not know this, but I'm a frustrated mechanic. I have a huge tool chest at home. I have a lift. I do all my own work. I changed wheels and tires. And what I'm getting at is that there's a tool for every job. And I look at vehicles as tools, right? So some people need a visceral escape. Some people need a functional tool. Some people need something they go off-roading. Some people need to carry kids. So there's different image needs. There's functional needs. There's emotional needs. The Challenger serves a very important purpose for people that grew up in those times in the 60s and late and early 70s but couldn't afford the cars or were too young to buy them. Now they can, right? So there's that as well. You know, there's this kind of retro feel-good effect the car gives you. It's fully modern, but on the outside, there's an emotional tieback. So, and there's a bit of that going on in Alpha, too. There's some emotional tiebacks to the past, but we're blending. You know, we're blending the good stuff of the future and that emotional tie. It's very strong. There's nothing wrong with using your past for today's good. You know,
and you're seeing too, like with the growth of tracks around the country.
Yes.
The idea that, you know, a
private
European
tracks.
Thing, track days are something that's just a Saturday thing you do.
It's gone crazy.
But now we're
yeah.
seeing them here in the Motor City. I've got friends all over the country in Austin, Texas, and everyone,
yeah.
and not just Coda. I mean, but you know, driving. So when you have a car that you can have fun with on a track,
yeah.
That does, again, kind of changes how you look at a vehicle when you go to buy one.
It's a whole subculture. It's actually my hobby. I don't play golf. I basically go to track days. My wife and I both have sports cars that we take, and we have a good time. And it's not just about the 20 minutes every hour that you have. It's the camaraderie as well, right? We make great friends through it. It's a whole society.
I did notice that you passing the CTSV video made it to YouTube really quick.
Oh, yeah.
It was really quick.
That was
you covered it for about a lap and said, okay, I'm going to go buy you.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah.
Do you think with the Hellcats that they went, and I remember when it was first announced, and it's an amazing vehicle. It's the most fun I've had driving a car in a long time. But went from being, in my mind, like a halo vehicle. It's like, this is a statement. This is who we are. And now I see more and more. And like you said, it's a functional everyday driver, which is the damnest thing to say when you're talking about a 700 horsepower supercharged vehicle.
Yeah. And, you know, hats off to the engineering team that have integrated the car so well. It's docile when you want it to be. It has adaptive suspension, adaptive transmissions. You can select modes, you can select the horsepower you want. So
right.
So it fits the mood. And I taught my 16-year-old how to drive in my Charger Hellcat. And I just put in valet mode, so it replicates a Pentastar V6, and away we went. You know, so she drove that for 3-4 months, getting her license.
Have you guys changed how we look at horsepower with this vehicle?
Well, it's not my call. I mean, I'm part of those decisions back in the day, but I think horsepower is accessible. I mean, I think what Mopar's always done is brought a lot of power to the masses in a way, right? Some of the stuff, the numbers you read about, and it's hard to associate those to a sedan that you can drive every day. It's usually you imagine those numbers attached to exotic cars that cost, you know, 5 times the price.
Right.
So that's what Mopar's always done, is we've overpowered our vehicles a little bit, give you a little more thrill per the dollar, so to speak. But the horsepower is accessible and it's safe, right? You've got so many control systems on with very advanced stability controls. So the car is a complete package, you know.
Are we in an arms race as an industry right now?
I think what's fascinating to me is we are in a time when everything is possible, right? If you go back, I just remember these times. I grew up in the 70s, but people thought that muscle car was done back in the late 70s. It was
sure.
over, right?
Remember, the gas crisis, we were done.
The Trans Am had a scintillating 180 horsepower. It was considered a lot of power back then. And here we are talking about cars in the 700 horsepower range. Getting in some cases 25 mpg on the freeway, which is, how does that possible, right? So we have this technology that's allowing us to do a lot of things well. You know, and they meet full emissions. You know, those cars are completely, you know, sellable in all 50 states. So it takes a lot of work. It's not easy. I really tip the hat to the engineers that find a way to use all of this technology and make it all happen. But, you know, there's a balance. We sell those cars with V6 engines, with all-wheel drive, all different ways, you know.
Is Jeep the world brand?
It looks that way. It's doing well everywhere. I travel all over the world now. I've been to Asia several times. I've been to South America, and I see the Jeep brand really doing well in Latin America, in Europe. Renegades are everywhere. I mean, I can't go anywhere, whether it's Paris or even London, and also especially Italy. I'm in Italy every month. They're everywhere. I mean, and it's amazing to see the Jeep brand, because they're affordable now. You know, we
right.
make a small Jeep. We haven't made compact Jeeps in that way with an international flair, and it's beautiful to see them. And the data shows us the Jeep brand is as recognizable as Apple and Nike and things like that.
That's, you know, what I meant. As far as a world car, I was talking to someone. I think as far as a brand, I don't know that there's an automotive brand worldwide that everybody knows.
Yeah. It's bothered me, though, that people sometimes call other four-wheel drive things Jeeps. So it's nice to see that in those places now they have actual Jeeps to call Jeeps. You know? so that's fun to see that.
When you look at vehicles, and again, this is something I've read from you a couple times, it's always, I try to get my head around this, Ralph, that you design from the inside out. Is that right?
Yeah, we package. You know, a lot of I hate the word styling. I really think styling oversimplifies what we do.
What do you mean? I mean, is it just because we... something as simple as curves and lines and colors that we,
yeah, and that's,
as consumers,
that's,
we can,
that's
simplify
5% of what we do. I mean, we really spend a lot of time packaging the car from, as you say, from the inside out, making sure the people fit, mining the ergonomics, looking at all the requirements, especially a vehicle like the Pacifica, for example, but even sports cars. You look at a lot of our cars have good infotainment systems that are within reach, touch screens. We are responsible for all that, how it looks, how it feels, even the pages within. We have a whole department that that does the infotainment, the coloring, the way the layers are done, the way the information is presented to you. So the styling is great, and it's, I would say, 5 to 10% of the time we're purely styling and sketching, but the rest of the time we're developing those designs, respecting aerodynamics, looking at headlamp performance, sheet metal stampability. I mean, all these technical things that are fun, but not, you know, just making it pretty.
So the design side of the vehicles are off too when mm-hmm. you're doing stuff. Weights become a big issue with vehicles, obviously, yeah. with all the cafe conversation and stuff. Could you ever see a time that you would get rid of the nav system from a vehicle and just, I know you have a Google CarPlay and Android Auto that you can link up a vehicle to it. Do you need the navigation system in the car?
We've looked at that. People still like it. The good news is they're getting lighter. Right now, in the old days, the radio you saw, there was a huge silver box behind the radio. Today, there's just a screen and a small silver box because the CD player is virtually gone. Right. It's almost extinct. We still offer it in certain vehicles. That's happening. We have what we call quadruple redundancy in our cars. We could get rid of the screen because a lot of it's on the steering wheel or in the or voice command or your phone, as you're saying. But because we have such a broad customer base, we want to be careful we don't alienate anyone. So we still offer the redundancy of the screen.
But you don't need the GPS, the nav in it anymore, do you? I mean, if you have your phones, we're all using smartphones.
It's hard to beat. If you think about the GPS is much more powerful than your phone because of the antenna is more powerful. It has dead reckoning. There's things it can do that the phone quite can. If you ever try to drive a car with a GPS or even walk in downtown LA, for example, the buildings are so tall that it blocks the signal. So your phone gets all spun around. And that would be bad in a car. Okay. Just when you need it the most, right?
Yeah, where you know
so
where
there's
at.
Still places where our GPS systems are far superior.
So when we hear talk about they're getting rid of all the navigation system in cars, that's probably one person had a discussion in a hallway somewhere.
You could do it. And some people don't have to. It's still optional. I mean, you know, we don't force a customer to take a nav. You can still get a lot of cars and not pay for the nav if you don't want to. And we do have, like you're saying, Apple and Android. Android and Apple CarPlay are becoming more prevalent in our vehicles as well this year, in the 300 and Charger and Grand Cherokee.
My wife, Kathy, had a question for you, and it was better anything. No, seriously, this was a good one, too, and she had a better one than I did. We were talking about you. I hope you don't mind. In media, you get told no a lot, or people give you feedback in a negative way. Mm-hmm. You do something on the radio a bit, and they go, yeah, that really wasn't that good, you know, or don't do that again. Or, you know, as a parent, you do something and you go, all right,
we
that
get
wasn't
that
right. But my point, though, is like the I wouldn't say rejection, but negative feedback and the stuff that you get on the level you get in public on something you've spent years on. How do you deal with that?
It can be tough, but I balance it out because it happened on the Cherokee design. It's happened before. Especially you notice it. I've noticed it's at the beginning of a launch when a vehicle, especially the more daring the design is, initially there's always rejection. There's always, you know, even sometimes 60% of the people that hate it. And then what I look at is the 40% that really like it. Do they love it or do they just kind of like it? And usually it's a very intense reaction. And what I've seen with certain cars over time, that 40% becomes 50, becomes 60, becomes 70, and all of a sudden the car does well. And that was exactly the case with the Cherokee. When it was first seen, it was not a flattering picture that leaked out. There was a lot of interesting debate, but it was a debate. And I love that tension. Sometimes if a car is immediately liked too easily, it might not have the lasting power because it doesn't have that tension. So I don't mind it. I look at it as constructive. I expect it. We know, keep in mind, we've been sketching these things 2-3 years before the public sees them. So even within the building, you get people say, well, I don't know if that's the right thing to do, or we take it to research clinics and we get that same tense reaction. You grow a thick skin and you can't please everyone. You know, as long as the people that do buy it love it, then I'm happy. You know?
So you look at something like the 200, which was a great car. Mm-hmm. Was it a function of timing with the vehicle, or it just run its course, or the market we're in now? Or?
It's the market. It's the public has spoken. I mean, if you look at the D segment, which is where that 200 plays, the D sedan segment is slowly retreating a little bit. You know what I mean? And what's growing and where we're playing very well is the compact crossover. Especially in where the Renegade is and the new Compass are booming right now, all over the world, not just in the U.S.
Right.
All over the world, people are really finding out that these compact crossovers have the same space as a D sedan, you know, and in some cases get the same fuel economy. They get a little bit better command of the road driving, and you get a little more capability if you check the box for the all-wheel drive. So they're kind of looking at transportation functionality, you know, and some people will always like the sedan's shape. But when we look at where we have strengths, and it's where it's happening right now. And we saw that coming a long time ago.
Do you still think it's cyclical, though?
No,
I mean, there's something coming down the road.
Shift. It's a permanent shift. If you think about, you know, if you look at, think about our first generation Liberty, it was a truck. a cast iron live axle heavy truck with a cast iron engine, right?
Right.
That was our first Jeep Liberty. Our Cherokee, which spiritually replaces that car, is a very high-tech aluminum engine, independent suspension, right? So the fuel economy numbers are 5, 6, 7 miles per gallon better. So the penalty is not there anymore, right? And the functionality is many-fold better than some sedans. So people are making the call. And I think if you think about Europe, the hatchback's been popular forever. These are really lifted hatchbacks. You know? They're trucks, you know, with they have that kind of functionality, which appeals to people. People love the idea to put as much as possible in the same space.
What do you think about the idea of the city trucks? I've seen a couple of those coming up. You know, yeah. I mean, I've yeah. seen the. I don't know that the Ridgeline. You see the Colorado. Oh, then I see you guys. This idea of a city truck. You know, I always joke about it. Is it a truck if I have to borrow my friend's truck to move something big? But it is. It serves that purpose. But you know, the talk about Jeep with the Wrangler with the you know with the bed like that, is that something we're going to get to as well?
Can't talk about that, but we look at the space. We pay attention to all of those trends in the market. We've been there before. You know, we had the Dakota, and we've had we showed a concept called the Rant. What was it called? Oh, it was pretty cool. I think it was a Rampage. We called it. It's a pretty neat concept. So we've dabbled in that space. We're watching it very closely. So
okay,
I'll leave it at that.
Okay, good. Because I'm the first person to ask about the pickup truck Jeep, right? That was an exclusive?
Yeah. And I think GM has done really well. I like the Colorado they showed in LA. It was really cool with the off-road.
It's a cool feature. But again,
the spool valve shocks and all that stuff.
And then we're waiting to see what's happening with Jeep. Yeah. And, you know, I would imagine the auto show coming up here in Detroit. You guys always have a couple bells and whistles coming. See, I'm not asking. I'm not asking.
How about those Lions? They're doing
well. See, I didn't ask. I just ran up. That was more of a Halo type thing. And I'm pretty proud of myself that we made it 15 minutes without mentioning the word autonomous. I went 15 minutes without mentioning autonomous.
Yeah.
As a designer, as the head of global design, as a guy who's so passionate, creates these amazing, passionate cars, when you see an egg rolling down the street with a couch in it, does it just make your right eye twitch a little bit?
No, I think design is going to always be relevant, and I think companies are always going to want to brand their things, right? And what we do, a lot of what we do is branding. It's branding work, basically. You're giving a car a distinct personality, whether it's autonomous or it's driven or owned by a fleet company or owned by an individual, it still has to be awesome. It still has to embellish the road. I don't want, you know, visual pollution on the roads either, right? So that's something we're very passionate about. And I believe the people that make stuff will make stuff for a long time coming. A lot of the tech companies that have been threatening to get into this business have realized that it's pretty tough to make stuff, you know, especially in high volume and do it efficiently. And we're very good at that. And at the same time, we're learning. But a lot of talk about autonomous. There's a ton of discussion about it. But if you look at what's available on the road, it's zero right now. So it's a good discussion, and it's probably coming, but the rate at which it's coming is probably in some ways a little overhyped up right now because it's a very complicated discussion. I mean, we're talking about C-3PO level of AI.
Well, that's I know you've talked about it too, but as a member of the media, it's great clickbait. Yeah. It's great clickbait. Yeah. I mean, if you do a story about an autonomous vehicle, it's, you know, the idea.
And it's I'm so fascinated by sci-fi since I was, you know, we grew up in the same time probably.
Yeah.
I loved sci-fi movies, whether Star Wars, and Americans love that stuff. They love the future. They love the idea of conquering and going to the moon and all that stuff. And I think autonomous cars is right up there with that. It's the future now. So it's very sexy to talk about. And I think it all the stuff we talked about 50 years ago did happen. It just, some of it took longer than other things, right? I've been watching Knight Rider. That was one of my favorite shows of all time. I mean, the mid-80s was an autonomous car already.
Yeah.
Kit was an autonomous, fully intelligent.
That's a good point.
Think about it. The car
was a
friend. And I've always talked about the vehicle one day will become your best friend. Hey, Joe, you'll name your car, and you know the car will come up to you.
But do you think, Jeremy Clarkson brought up autonomous vehicles on Top Gear, do you remember there was one point that he brought up and it went worldwide, and it was a simple question where he said, you're driving down the road, your car is going to crash. There's two people on the sidewalk.
Yeah, and that's what I mean by AI. The vehicle has to think like a human being. And I race cars. I'm very passionate about driving, and it's hard. It's harder than walking. I mean, you really have to... You think about how many calculations you're making per second. So it's a tougher thing to execute. Now, on the other hand, I'm a big believer in ADAS, which is Advanced Driver Assistance Systems, which we have in our we talk about Pacifica, a lot of our vehicles have those systems. So I think on the way to hunting autonomous cars, we're going to discover great technologies that are going to help keep cars safer, tomorrow.
Anytime you're talking about the automotive industry, it can't be bad, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if it creates that dialogue where, you know, wherever that discussion leads 15, 20 years down the road.
You know what I love? It's attracting really great scientists to this industry. You know, we're really getting some great talent, even in our own company. We're getting kids out of universities that otherwise would not have come to the auto industry. So it's pretty cool. Yeah. Get kids from Carnegie Mellon, from all over. So
did you get any chance to do any F1 with Ferrari this year?
Watching it.
Did you get to go anywhere?
Yeah, I went to the Shanghai race and a Montreal race, which I love always. And last year I did Monaco, and my dream is still, I was invited to the one in Italy, but I wasn't able to go. But
Monza?
Yes. Oh my gosh, that's like high on the bucket list.
Well, yeah.
And not even for the cars, just for the madness, the amazingness of the fans. They're the best fans.
See, I want to go walk Imola once, just to say I've been there.
And we're going to Monaco this year. I talked my wife into it, so we're...
Oh, really?
Yeah, she loves it.
You're going to be broke when you come back. You
absolutely
know that, right?
Absolutely broke.
Yeah. I saw Iron Man 3. I know how it works there. No. That's your reference point for all things Monaco. But you as a driver, I have to ask you, it's nothing to do with what's going on here in Auburn Hills where we're recording this, but Nico Rosberg walking away at 31 years old. What did you think as a fan?
It shocked me. I was shocked. And I could, you know, for him, I could see, you know, with his family, he's trying to get started and go on a family. That was his goal, just to do that, check the box and go. So, hey, if you're going to leave on a high. Yeah.
What's your goal?
My goal?
Yeah.
It's sort of happening right now. I mean, my goal from the day I took over design for the Chrysler Group initially was back in 08. I started this job, was to get our interiors to be world-class. And we've looked at, you know, with having Klaus in charge and really focusing on it, it's been a mission. It's been a personal mission of mine to fix our interiors, and go through every product one by one and try to make them as beautiful, as world-class as possible, but still have them have a visceral appeal, you know, and I think we've done that with Dodge. So it's a little work in progress. There's a lot more, but the goal, there's no such thing as a goal because I don't want to ever stop. You know, I'm excited to see this company. I think it's got so much potential. And honestly, a lot of people talk about these mergers and all that, but this marriage with Fiat has been amazing. I mean, from day one, we've been sharing technology. We've been traveling and seeing each other. We've mixed the groups together. The management team is a perfect blend of Italians and Americans. I mean, we get along famously. So it's two passionate companies come together to create a super passionate company.
They change your mindset?
I've been through a rough time. I mean, the 08, 09 times was tough for everybody, and especially this area. And I love seeing what I'm seeing now, watching Detroit singing. And I'm proud of GM and Ford. I think they've done a great job. And I could see, you feel it when you go downtown Detroit, when you walk around, you just feel that people are doing well. And we're hiring people from all over the country that want to live here. They want to work here. They want to be part of this movement. And I think it always goes back to us doing better work. And my goal is really for people to look at product that comes out of this area and now Italy and say that those people are doing great work. And that's what matters. Yeah.
Do you, what do you have to do to get a LaFerrari from them? Is there a goal?
They're all sold out.
It's not like Cub Scouts with popcorn. If you sell like 800 million boxes of popcorn, you get a LaFerrari.
That would be like 7 years of work for me to afford that car.
So if you could have one from the Ferrari stable, which one?
458 Italia. I love that vehicle.
Don't you? You said in interviews. It's not like we're not burying that. You have, it's not, okay.
Yes, we might have splurged, but it was a used one. You know,
it was a used one.
I could never
I'll tell Ken Langenfelter about that then.
It's a perverse thing. I love the way it looks. I love the styling of it, the sound.
No.
I would never race it. It's just too pretty.
There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, yeah, when we look at that. Racing, one last thing, and I don't want to keep you because I know I see the sun going down. Because in Michigan this time of year, the sun goes down in like 38 seconds and it's dark. It's the damnedest thing. When Sergio talked about NASCAR, and he didn't say anything other than he had talked to the France family, right? I mean, it wasn't like he came out and said, we're coming back in 2017.
And I know Jim France very well. I obviously dealt with him for over 3 years when I was running the NASCAR program. And he always said that, hey, if I ever get a chance to talk to Sergio, I just want to meet him and talk to him. He was at Daytona, and he was at the Ferrari Festival. So they had dinner. I think they happened to be sitting next to each other. So they talked, And what Sergio said is what Sergio said. So.
Whatever was said
resonated
enough with a guy like Sergio who has 18 billion things going on at once.
Yeah.
For him, and I know they're at Daytona, but for him to take time out and address it the way he did.
So your mission now is to go sit with Sergio and ask him this question.
I want it because I honestly don't think people understand how much time you poured in to Penske winning with Dodge in 2012. You know, as a whole team, you guys really worked your ass off with them.
The magic formula was our engineering team. They really joined forces with him. Because remember, we had switched to fuel injection.
Right.
The R6 engine, and it was really heavily co-developed with our own internal injection experts. And that was the key. We had virtually no engine failures. So we weren't chasing bugaboos. We were just racing and developing the car. We had a new car as well. So I really, tip of the hat goes to our engineers. Totally embraced, because we had the lowest budgets, we had the smallest budget in the entire racing world, but we had the biggest heart, you know. And I give it to the engineers.
That's a walk off when you win like that. If you're gonna Nico Rosberg NASCAR
Penske,
a little bit.
Penske runs the tightest ship. Yeah. I mean, he is salt of the earth, amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen him driving his Ferrari around every once in a while too.
A little known thing, we got him back in a race car. So we did a halfway through the season, we wanted to celebrate. We had a great mix of racing drivers, and we got a bunch of Viper ACRXs and got him to put a suit on and race with the rest of us. It was a private thing. Never was televised. We just did it for the hell of it. And he had a blast. He had the biggest permagrin on his face.
So with the changes to F1, if Ferrari called, would you play with some of the design stuff with the new era?
Talk about, they have a Flavio Manzoni who's, keep in mind that Ferrari's its own company, right? So
I understand, but yeah, I'm saying but what you've done with the Viper, when I start reading about the downforce,
I don't know what
they're getting into.
I'm so weird that way. I think Ferrari should be designed by Italians, and I think really? Flavio Manzoni is a fantastic designer who's running it there, so.
Oh, it's going to be gone.
I won't say no, but...
You wouldn't say no. Well,
I think it's working just fine.
It's fantastic. Congratulations on everything. Thank Happy you. Holidays to you and your family, too. And we'll follow, and we'll see what's next. I didn't mention CUDA.
How about those lions?
See? That's again. I get yelled at if I don't mention it. All my gearhead buddies are going to go, you didn't mention it.
You know what? When you ask me questions like that, it makes me... It warms up my heart, because I know there's so much passion for Mopar out there still. And that excites us. And I'm just glad that love affair for Mopar is alive and well.
I want that laugh. I want that little giggle when I see a Hellcat, even if it's not mine. I still want to. I want vehicles like that.
If anyone
hasn't
driven one, find a friend or test drive or go buy one, because these cars are just. It's amazing that car exists today and that it's so cool. So,
all right, we'll see you at the auto show.
All right.